OWC Radio number 2. We're going to talk about the Mac Pro, and we have an interview with Sean King. Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 2 of OWC Radio 2.0. I'm Tim Robertson, and I thank you for tuning in this week. And I've got an interview with Sean King, like I said at the top of the show. It goes about 45 minutes. Sean is, I've known Sean for a decade and a half now, and he's a great guy. I really like Sean King. And Sean is one of these people that has been around Apple and the Mac forever. I like people like that because, well, I've been around it that long as well. And so there's a shared history there. You know, he's been through the rough times as a Mac guy, the same as I have, the same as many of you have. And sometimes, you know, when I'm talking to guests, they start talking to, you know, their history, and they got into Apple in like 2005, 2006. And it was the iPod that kind of drew them into the Apple universe, if you will, and they became a Mac fan. And that's great, but it's hard for me to really talk about what happened before because I lived through it. I was in the trenches, if you will, and Sean King is one of those guys that was in the trenches just like I was. So for me, it's fun to talk to someone. Like I said, I've known Sean a decade and a half, 15 years or more, and we don't talk very often. In fact, he just kind of recently came back on Twitter, or I'm sorry, not on Twitter, but Facebook, and that kind of spurred us talking again. And Sean's the same as he's always been to me. And in some respects, I probably am too. So it was really fun to sit down with Sean and have a nice long conversation. I hope you enjoy the interview. Again, he's been doing internet radio focused on the Mac. And now, of course, iPods, iPhones, iPads, all of that, the Apple universe, if you will, for a very, very long time, 15 years. I'm sorry, almost 20 years. Jeez. So he brings a wealth of information. He's definitely got a personality. He's met pretty much everybody in the Mac ecoverse. He's met some famous people, and he's got stories, and he tells us some of these stories, and I hope you enjoy it. One of the things I wanted to talk about this week at the beginning of the show, before we get to the interview segment, though, is the new Mac Pro. I really want one of these new Mac Pros, but I'll be honest, I've got a 27-inch iMac that I upgraded with an SSD. It's a brilliant screen. It's very fast. It's a 2009 model, and it works great for me. I also have a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and that's what I actually record podcasts on. That's what I'm recording this show on right now. And it's a great machine, and it's completely stock with a little extra memory. I would love to put an SSD in here, and I probably will do that eventually. Making this MacBook Pro faster would definitely benefit what I do with it. Probably what I'm going to do is, it's pretty much maxed out on RAM now, so I'm going to have the, I'm going to buy, I should say, the data doubler from OWC. I'm going to pull out the optical drive and I'm going to put an SSD in the data doubler where the optical drive goes. That's exactly what I did in my iMac. Honestly, the results are night and day. The funny thing is on my Mac, my iMac, I should say, I was getting a lot of spinning beach balls. I mean, a lot. And it's got a lot of RAM in it, so it was kind of discouraging. And anytime I got the spinning beach balls, I could hear the hard drive being accessed. So I knew that the bottleneck somewhere was in the hard drive, or maybe it was in the OS. So when I put the new drive in the machine, the SSD, the only thing I really put on the SSD is the operating system and a couple of the programs that I use all the time, such as iTunes, my mail, and iPhoto. It's night and day. I can't tell you the last time I actually got a spinning beach ball on my iMac. It's that significant. Even more so, my daughter used to play a lot of Flash games. And this machine would just, probably after 15 minutes or so, it would just start running really, really hot. The fans would kick on. Hot air was blowing out of the top of it. It would become less and less responsive. I thought it was just Flash. Now, obviously, it was flash. But I found a funny thing. When we put the SSD in it, the same games that she was playing that uses flash wasn't making my iMac run any hotter than it was before. Before she was playing the games, I should say. In other words, putting the SSD in there seems to have, I don't know why, but it cured my flash problems. I don't know what flash is doing in conjunction with my standard hard drive. They didn't get along. SSD, no problem at all. And my daughter's obviously very happy because she loves playing those games on my iMac. But getting back to, you know, what I have here and the Mac Pro, I want a Mac Pro, but I don't need a Mac Pro. So it's not really something I'm going to buy anytime soon. It doesn't do anything for me for what I do professionally and personally with my machines that I can't do already. It's not going to help me record a podcast any faster. It's not going to play movies any quicker. It doesn't do any of those things for me. Now, if I was doing video production or hardcore audio engineering, yes, that's when I'm going to want a Mac Pro. But I'm not doing those things, so I don't really need one. Thus, I get to save money and not buy one. But that being said, some news came out this week. The Mac Pro shipping date went from 4 months. I know, right? 4 months waiting for a Mac Pro. That's like ordering it in January and you get it in April. I don't know about you, but I don't think I could wait that long. That would drive me crazy. But it went from 4 months to 3 to 5 weeks. So at the most, you should be waiting maybe a month and a week or so. It's about a month. That's what 3 to 5 weeks tells me. It's about a month. So it's a quarter of the wait time, but that's still a long time, at least in my opinion, 3 to 5 weeks waiting for this new machine. This new machine from Apple, this new Mac Pro, looks amazing. And don't get me wrong, when I say I don't need one, that doesn't mean I don't want one. I really do. Look, I'm a Mac guy, and this is the most powerful Mac Apple has ever made. I obviously want one, but I don't need one, and that's a big difference. So my question is, and maybe some of you know, let me know, send me an email if you know this or not. The email address is owcradio@macsales.com. Is this 3 to 5 week wait time if you order online? What happens if you go into an Apple store and say, I want a new Mac Pro? Now, obviously, you can't customize it at all if you go into the Apple store. But if I walk in and I want just a stock Mac Pro, could you get it from the Apple store? Or are they going to say, I'm sorry, we don't have it in stock, you have to order it online? Or, yeah, we could take your money and call you when it comes in or ship it to you when it comes in. I don't know. So if any of you have any plans to visit an Apple store over the next, say, 10 days, please ask and see what they say. And let me know, owcradio@macsales.com. That is the email address. I don't know, 3 to 5 weeks waiting for a new computer would... That would drive me crazy. Now, Apple has the same problem sometimes when the new new iPhones come out, and there's a wait time. In fact, I said iMacs, and that's true too. When these new really thin iMacs first came out, there was a wait time. I guess that's kind of when you're real successful and everybody wants your products, sometimes there's going to be shortages. And look, Apple doesn't have big warehouses where they make Macs, ship them to this warehouse and it sits there until someone orders them. That's not how it works. Apple makes them and they ship it directly from the factory to you. And as we all know, because Apple loves to talk about this, the Mac Pros are actually made here in the United States. So, you know, shipping time really shouldn't come into play much, but still, 3 to 5 weeks wait on the Mac Pro. Now, what amazed me, and I got to be honest, when I went to the Apple website, there's a lot of customization that you can do with the new Mac Pro. You don't have to get just the stock one. So what if I wanted to get the biggest, baddest Mac Pro I can get? Here's the thing. I can upgrade the standard 6-core Xeon processor to a 8, 10, or even a 12-core machine. That's a 12-core Xeon processor is, man, that thing would kick butt. Right? But here's the thing, that 12-core upgrade for the Mac Pro, $3,000 if you order it from Apple. That's a lot of money, right? Now, all the prices that I may or may not talk about today, these prices are only reflected for today. In other words, I can't guarantee prices from Apple or OWC for any product in the future. So if I say something cost $3,000 today, today is the last week of April. Technically, it's April, what is it, the 25th, Friday. This is the only day that these prices are good for. I don't know what's going to happen over the weekend. I can't tell you the prices are going to go up or down on Monday from Apple or OWC. So any prices are only guaranteed today, April 25th. After today, I can't guarantee prices. So don't hold me to any other prices that we talk about here. But $3,000 for that 12-core Xeon processor. But what if you want that, but you didn't have quite that much money? Well, here's an idea. Otherworld Computing has a turnkey upgrade program for not just the old Mac Pro, the brand new Mac Pro. I bet a lot of you didn't know that. You don't have to just buy the bone stock Mac Pro from Apple and then use OWC to get it upgraded. Just that 12-core processor. That, again, $3,000 to Apple, right now, today, from OWC, that processor upgrade is $1,480. That's less than half of what Apple is charging. Half. That's, I don't know about you, but man, that's a lot of money, isn't it? Wow. This kind of surprised me, too. RAM is really the most important thing you can upgrade in any computer, not just the Mac Pro, but a Mac Mini, an iMac, a MacBook Pro, whatever machine you have. If it comes with a stock amount of RAM, you can upgrade that RAM and get a lot more performance from your machine. Now, from Apple, you can order up to 32 gigabytes of RAM on the Mac Pro. I'm sorry, up to 64 gigs of memory from Apple. 64 gigs. That's what Apple says it supports, except it doesn't. It supports more, but Apple doesn't give you the option to buy anymore. So heck, you can get it from, you guessed it, OWC. You can get 128 gigabytes of RAM for the brand new Mac Pro. That's twice as much as Apple will sell you. That's pretty awesome. You know, from Apple, for the extra up to 64 gigs of RAM, it's an extra $1,200. What if you didn't need 128 gigs? You want to go with the same amount of RAM that Apple will sell you, 64? OWC, right now, $830. That's a huge difference, $1,200 or $829. Now, this is for the brand new Mac Pro 2013. This is the turnkey program at OWC. Go to macsales.com. And you're going to find this deal. I'm going to put a direct link into what we're talking about here at the blog website at Mac Sales. If you go to OWC Blogs, it's right there on the main page. All the links to everything I talk about is going to be under show notes for episode number 2. So keep that in mind. So you can get the same upgrades or better at OWC than you can get at Apple for significantly less money. Why would you want to spend the more? Why? I don't know why anybody would ever go with that upgrade through Apple when you can just get it at OWC. I mean, the processor alone, that 12-core processor, less than half. I don't know why Apple has such a premium price on a processor. I mean, $3,000 compared to half? That's... I mean, you can go out and buy for the money you save, you could literally go buy an iMac or a MacBook Pro or MacBook Air. Well, you couldn't buy a Pro, but you could buy an Air. You could almost buy a Pro. But you could buy a whole nother computer from just the money you save by getting a processor upgrade from OWC than you can from Apple. That's crazy. But here's the thing. Maybe you already have a Mac Pro. It's just not the brand new one. And it works great for you. Why would you need to go and buy a brand new Mac Pro when you've already got a Mac Pro? It's even not that old. Say you bought it between, say, 2010 to 12, somewhere in that time frame. So you've got one. It's not very old. Yes, it's not, you know, this tiny little round cylinder, which we all agree is super fast, but the one you've got probably under your desk, because it's pretty big, is a screamer. It works great. What do you need a brand new one for? Couldn't you just upgrade that older machine? You can. In fact, that's kind of what OWC is about. Taking your existing machine, upgrading it, making it better, making it comparable to what Apple is selling brand new right now. Honestly, that's what I would do if I had a Mac Pro right now. As much as I really like the look of the brand new Mac Pro, I don't know. I'm always a little bit gun shy when it comes to brand new SKUs, brand new products. I don't want to be the guinea pig. You know, if there's a problem, I don't want to be the person that gets hit with a recall. I'd rather buy a second generation of a new product rather than the first. Now, of course, I didn't do that with the iPhone, and I didn't do that with the iPad. I bought the brand new generation of both, but I did do that with the iMac, and I did do that with the Mac Pro. And I don't know. Maybe it's old fears, but I just feel more confident knowing that these have been built for a while before I go buy one. So I'm happy to upgrade my older equipment. And let's be honest, a lot of us Mac users, and I'm one of them, we like our old machines. You know, I don't want to say they have a personality, but they mean something to us. They're reliable, and we've customized them some, but it's our machine. And it works great. And why do you need to replace it if it's doing the job? Well, maybe it is starting to get a little slow. Can you save money and upgrade it over buying a brand new computer from Apple? You can, especially with the Mac Pro. So there's just a ton of upgradability options for an old Mac Pro. And I keep saying old, but to me, a machine that was bought in, say, 2010, that's not really old. That's, if you had a car that was 4 years old, would you consider it old? No. A four-year-old child isn't old. that's probably not the best comparison. But you get what I mean. A four-year-old machine isn't really all that old. But you can upgrade your old Mac Pro, and here's a few things that you could do. OWC offers a turnkey upgrade program for the older Mac Pro. You can turn your older Mac Pro into a modern speed demon. You can upgrade the processor up to a 3.46 gigahertz 12-core machine. That's right, 12 cores, 3.4 gigahertz. That's a fast machine. If you're not sure how to remove the processor tray and send it to OWC, there's actually videos online. Now, this isn't something that I would recommend that you buy and do yourself. Turnkey means you pull it out, you put it in a box, and when I say pull it out, there's a tray that your processor sits on in your Mac Pro. You pull the tray out, and again, if you don't know how to do it, there's videos at Other World Computing's website that's going to show you exactly how to do it. You pull it out, you put it in a box that OWC will ship you. You ship it to them. They get your processor tray. They upgrade the processor for you, and they ship this back. Now you have a speed demon, a 12-core machine. If you're wondering what machines are eligible for this particular upgrade, pretty much all 2010, 2012 machines. If you go to your model identifier, as long as it says Mac Pro 5,1, you're golden. So go to your About This Mac and System Profiler, see what machine you have. And if you're not sure, simply get a hold of OWC and they'll help you. You can give them a call on the phone. They'll walk you right through it. They'll take care of you. Now, processor upgrading an old Mac Pro is going to make a world of difference. You know what's going to make even more of a difference? Putting an SSD in your Mac Pro. Now, I know what you're saying. Wait a minute. The Mac Pros have a much larger hard drive. Physically, it's a 3.5-inch hard drive. The SSDs are all 2.5-inch. I can't put a 2.5-inch drive in a 3.5-inch bay, right? Wrong. OWC has a lot of different mounting options. The OWC Mount Pro allows you to install any 2.5-inch hard drive or SSD into an 09 or 010 Mac Pro. In fact, OWC has almost any mount you need to install a smaller 2.5-inch SSD into your Mac. Not just the Mac Pros. Remember, earlier I was talking about I have an OWC data doubler in my iMac, which is a 2009, and I've got an SSD installed in there. And it really is amazing. If you've never had a machine with an SSD in it, the difference is night and day. It really is. They're more reliable. They're faster. Everything is faster. Launching applications, saving files. The boot up alone on my iMac is a quarter of the time that it used to be. It used to be if my machine was completely turned off and I reached around the back and hit the power button, I go make a cup of coffee, get my sugar and cream in it, stir it, come back, sit down, take a few drinks, and the machine is still starting. That's how long it took. With the SSD, I'm not even to the kitchen yet, and it's at my desktop. That's how fast it is. Now imagine a Mac Pro with a 12-core upgrade and an SSD. It's, man. Single-core processor Mac Pros can take up to 32 gigs of RAM, but if you got a dual-core processor machine, you can get up to 64 gigs in your older Mac Pro. So upgrading the RAM up to 64 gigs if you've got a dual processor, or 32 gigs if you've got the single processor, putting in a fast SSD, and a brand new processor. Really, do you really need the new Mac Pro now? Seriously, if you're running pretty much a stock Mac Pro, say from 2010, 4 years old, and you keep looking at these benchmark tests about the new Mac Pro and how everyone's talking about how fast it is and everybody wants one, and you go to the Apple's website and you start adding the things you want to it, you know what? I want more of a processor than what it comes with. I want more RAM. All of a sudden, wow, you've got a really, really expensive potential Mac Pro. Why not spend half that money, less than half that money? Or I should say more than half the money. Well, I don't know how you want to. Significantly less, put it that way. And just upgrade your old Mac Pro. You're going to get another 3 or 4 years out of it. It's going to run rings around pretty much everything else that's out there. Will it be as fast as Apple's Mac Pro, the brand new one? Honestly, probably not. It probably won't. But here's the thing about the old Mac Pros. You've got a lot more storage capacity in it because you got all those slots that you could put more hard drives in. I really like, look, the body style of the brand new Mac Pro is pretty awesome. But I don't know, when I think of a desktop computer, I don't think this little round cylinder thing. I'm sure my preconceptions of that will change eventually. But when I think of a Mac Pro, I still see the big box Mac Pro. That's a computer. I can open it. I can do different things with it. That'll change. My opinions will change over time. And yeah, the new ones are going to be faster than the old ones. But there's something about the old Mac Pro that I really like. And I bet a lot of you are with me on that. They're just cool machines, and they're fast. And because of OWC's upgrade program, they could be a lot faster. And you don't have to upgrade it at all anytime soon. I'm talking about upgrading to a new one. Upgrade your old machine. Keep it going. It's kind of better for the environment anyways, isn't it? What are you going to do with that old machine if you buy a new one? Sell it? So I don't know. It's up to you, but if I had an older Mac Pro here, I think I'd go with the upgrade option, use it for a few more years, and then buy, when I do get the new Mac Pro, I'm not buying this first generation Mac Pro, I'm buying the second generation of the new Mac Pros. And again, you know, I don't want to be that first person who gets something, the brand new SKU off the line. I like to wait a little bit to make sure everything's good before I buy one. And if I wait another couple of years, that Mac Pro is going to be even faster than the one that I can get today. So go up to Otherworld Computing's website, MacSales.com. If you just simply go to the show notes for episode number 2 of OWC Radio, I'm going to have a link directly to the Mac Pro 2013 turnkey upgrade program. And I'll also have one for the original Mac Pro. Now, you can also upgrade your current iMacs as well. We'll talk about that another time. And next week, we're going to talk about external storage because quite honestly, external storage is how most of us are dealing with our backups, with our archiving. And I think there's some confusion out there about what's a RAID. Do you actually need a RAID, or can you just buy any cheap hard drive and plug it in? What should you do? We're going to talk about that on episode number 3 of OWC Radio. In the meantime, I do really encourage you to send us feedback. Go to maxsales.com. Leave a message there for the show notes. I read them. I'll respond to them there. But really, I would love it if you guys send an email, and I'll read them right here on the show, owcradio@maxsales.com. And with that, we're going to stop here and jump over to the Sean King interview that I recorded just a couple days ago. I hope you guys really enjoy it. Sean's a really good guy. Make sure you check out his website and stuff. Again, we're going to have on our show notes links to all his links. And Sean King's just one of those guys. I think if you don't know who he is, I think this interview may convince you to go give him a try and listen to him. In the meantime, make sure you visit maxsales.com for all your Mac Pro upgrade needs. Really, they've got the RAM that you need. They've got the processor upgrades that you need. They've got SSDs that you could put in. If you don't want an SSD, you just want a much larger hard drive, they've got you covered there as well. Pretty much anything for your Mac, you're going to find at maxsales.com. Your Mac Life is an internet radio show that's quite honestly been around forever. And when I say forever, I mean as long as there's been a World Wide Web and before this show existed. The host is Sean King, and Sean, you're kind of the godfather when it comes to audio on the internet.
Hey, Tim, I prefer to say grandfather, because godfather makes me have more power than I actually have. I'm just old, man, that's all.
So I think I first met you in person at the Macworld 2000 show.
Okay.
And at the time, we were both smokers. We used to go out at the Moscone Center, and I would always run into you.
That's right.
But you also hosted an event that a whole bunch of Mac writers put together with Robert X. Kringley. And I remember you were the host of that. Do you remember that show?
Yeah, I was the MC of that. The folks, John Martellaro, who's now with the Mac Observer, asked me to MC that event. It was actually kind of fun, wasn't it? I wish we could have done more. That, to me, is what Macworld Expos were all about, not the show floor, things like that. It was that kind of getting together, and it was a lot of fun. And I think we only ever did it that one year, but even that one year, I get to meet a lot of fellow Mac writers and Mac bloggerati in the early Mac web, and it was fun to do that.
I really enjoyed it, too, and that's the only thing I really missed. I haven't gone to the last two Mac Worlds.
Yep,
something was always going on, it seems, but just the last two I just didn't go to. But it's not seeing all the vendors that I miss. It's seeing the community. And for me, that's what Apple's Mac universe has always represented. Apple doesn't always do things I agree or even like, and they're a corporation. But the community that's been built up over these number of years surrounding their products, that's kind of what I fell in love with. Was that the same for you?
Did you see the movie MacHeads?
Yes, I did.
A terrible movie, awful movie. Yep. But if you haven't seen it, go ahead and watch it, because I'm in it and I'm pretty good in it.
if he does say so himself.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I'm the best thing about that movie, which shows you how bad that movie is. Okay. if I'm your voice of sanity, you're in trouble.
Yeah,
kids, okay?
Definitely.
So it wasn't that good of a movie, but I said one thing I've always said throughout my entire history working on Macintoshes and doing podcasting and being involved in the Mac community, media community, and otherwise, that the Apple as a company is just a big multinational corporation. Don't love Apple as a company, but love the Mac community. That to me is what I've always been focused on, what I've always liked doing. Yeah, I'm with you. Apple often does things that piss me off and just make me angry, not only from a software point of view or hardware point of view, but also from a company point of view. But the Macintosh community has always been what has kept me in this. There's been a couple times when I've wanted to quit all this crap and go off to do other things, but it's always been the community that's brought me back and kept me here.
Yeah, it's the same with me, and I love the community. That's why I've been writing product reviews as long as I have, articles and podcasting. Now, how did you feel about podcasting when it first came out? Because when I started the My Mac podcast back in 2004, I mean, that's kind of when podcasting started, The first thing I thought of, honestly, is, wow, this is kind of infringing on Sean King's territory, and that's his thing. I'm not a radio guy. That's what Sean does. But it's been, you know, 10 years now. Podcasting obviously stuck around. Well, did you see that as a threat to what you were doing at the time?
The funny thing, you say you started it in 2004 when podcasting started. I had already been doing it for 10 years then. For folks who don't know, that it wasn't even called podcasting. I started the show 20 years ago this past March. And at that point, it was just wanting to get my voice out to a bunch of people who showed an interest in the things I had to say. And it was done via Real Audio. We weren't even using QuickTime at the time. Apple had no interest in this kind of stuff. So at the beginning, yes, when I think maybe after 4 or 5 years, another person came along to do an audio show. And I called it a broadcast because there was no such thing as podcasting. And I thought, no, this is me, man. This is my thing.
Right. Leave me alone.
Exactly. You know, get out of my space. But one of the great things about podcasting in general, that there are so many different ways of doing the same thing. If we say the same thing is putting your audio or your video on the web,
right?
Okay, we're all doing the same thing, but we all have a different angle to it. We all have a different way of looking at things. The folks at the Mac Observer I mentioned before, Dave Hamilton does his Mac Geek Gab, and I couldn't compete with Dave. I'm not a geek. I'm not that in-depth techie kind of guy. Dave, on a couple of shows ago, was talking about reprogramming his wireless router. I'm like, what? You can do that? I've got a time machine, a time capsule here, and I'm perfectly happy with that. So everyone's got their niche. Everyone's got their own little way of looking at things. Mine happens to be from the lifestyle point of view, and it's not a geeky show. It's not a show about how to pull a hard drive and put a new one in. I don't even know how to do that stuff. For me, it's all about the people who use Macintoshes, the way they use them, and the fun, cool things that we can do with them. And it's much less about the actual computers themselves. So, yeah, there's the biggest thing is competition for ad dollars. That's always going to be the issue. But about 5 years ago, I decided I wasn't going to chase after ad dollars, if only because I suck at selling advertising. And so now that pain point has been removed from me completely. So for me, the more podcasts, the better. All I want is good podcasts, not just everyone with a voice doing a podcast, but good sounding, good quality podcasts.
And there's still way too many that don't have that good audio quality. It's almost unlistenable, but I think it's getting better. It's more out of the basement and more in an actual studio, and that's always good.
Well, it's about knowledge and tools.
Yes.
You know, when you know, the other thing is, it's also about critique. A lot of folks are afraid to say things to a podcaster or to a website or things like that. But people don't know how to get better unless you tell them what they're doing wrong. Yep. I've always told my audience, if you don't like what I'm doing, let me know. I may not listen, but I want to hear that feedback. I want to hear that honest criticism, constructive criticism. And that's how you get better, is someone saying, hey, your mic sounds like crap. Okay, I'll go buy a different mic. Or you're doing this wrong. Well, I don't agree with you, so thanks very much. But as long as those podcasters are striving for knowledge of how to make their gear better and how to make their sound better, then things will get better. And, you know, the cream rises to the top. The good stuff gets listeners, the bad stuff doesn't. It's simple as that.
That is absolutely true. What gets you in front of the mic now? What motivates you? You're going to sit down, you're going to do a show. How much prep time have you done? And what motivates you to still do it? I mean, 20 years is not a short amount of time, and I can appreciate that exactly, because I actually started my publishing in 1995, and that's still going on. So we have something similar there. I know what motivates me to continue it, but what motivates you, Sean? You're going to sit down in front of that mic, you're going to turn on the camera, you're going to hit record. What is it that gets you going?
If I don't do this every Wednesday evening at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, I have to go find a real job. That's it, man. I mean, yeah. If I don't do this, you got to find I mean, what motivates me mostly is the audience that I see in our IRC chat rooms and send me emails from literally around the world. There's all kinds of times, and I just don't feel there's nothing happening in the Mac news web. There's no interesting things to talk about. We're not a rumor site. We don't talk about things for the sake of talking about them. We want things that are interesting, that are informative, that the audience can get their teeth into and discuss. And sometimes that just doesn't happen. You know, in those lull times, for example, before Christmas, back in the old days when we were all waiting for Apple to announce stuff at a Mac World Expo, there was nothing going on in the month of December. Everybody geared up for Expo. And those were hard shows, man. Those are tough shows to do, because none of the manufacturers wanted to come on to talk about their product because they were about to announce it in a month.
Yeah, right.
And for me, it was just, okay, I got to do this for the audience because the audience wants to hear this kind of stuff. And the motivation comes from, I like talking. I love talking to people about these kinds of issues. You can always find something to talk about. It's a matter of focus and a matter of knowing what the audience is interested in and what you can talk about. I could always talk about hard drives. I don't know a damn thing about them, but I can talk about them. So you've got to find things within yourself that will keep you sitting in front of the microphone every week.
Are you a believer in, if you do the show that you want to do, you'll find an audience, or do you believe in listen to what the audience is asking for and then give them what they're asking for?
That's a great question. When I first started the show, I was doing everything the audience asked me to do, every single change that they said. And after a while, I realized I'm not doing the show I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm changing the show every week because some guy in Des Moines says, well, I don't like this. Don't do that. Okay, I won't. I'll do what you said instead. And you end up running around and chasing your tail for a while. So what I've been telling new podcasters who want advice, I always say, find what you love, find what you like to do, and stick with that. Even if the audience says, we don't like this, well, then you'll find a different audience. I've had, over the years, 20 years of doing this, I've had many, many folks now over the years saying, if you don't stop doing that, I'm not going to listen. Okay, don't listen. Mm-hmm. You know, I've stopped chasing you as an audience member because I know who my audience is after all this time, and I'm going to stay true to those people. If you don't want to listen because I've said something that you disagree with because of my politics or because of my feelings about Apple or whatever it might be, that's fine. That's your opinion, and I completely respect your opinion. But I'm not going to change because one guy in Minnesota has asked me to change the show.
I got that advice from all people, Steve Jobs.
Really?
Right before I started podcasting, I saw an interview that he did. I can't remember who it was now, but it was a video interview. I saw it either online or some news program. I don't remember what it was. So this was probably sometime in 2003. And he flat out said that they don't make products for the consumers. They don't test. They don't bring in customers for opinion. They make the products that they want to make and that they want to use. And they figure there's going to be an audience from that because they think they have great taste. And that kind of stuck with me. I thought, that's how you do something creative. Yeah. You don't do it by what you think is sellable or what you think people are going to like. You do it by figuring out what you want in your life, in this product or in this show or in this article, whatever it is, how you can make it better so you like it. And then people will find it.
The other aspect people have to remember if you're doing a podcast or thinking about doing a podcast is, why are you doing it? Are you doing it? When we first started doing it 20 years ago, it was because we just wanted to talk about this stuff. There was me and another guy named Adam here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, who just wanted, we had this information, we had these great conversations. We wanted to record those and put them on this new internet thing, this new World Wide Web thing for other folks to listen to. So if you're doing it for the love of the thing, whatever that thing might be, whether it be motorcycles or computers or cats, whatever it is, then that's great. But if you're also doing it for maybe the monetary value of it, you see people doing podcasts, you see advertising, you think, hey, I want to get a piece of that.
Right.
You might have to do your podcast a little differently. For example, on my show, it's R-rated. I'll say anything that pops into my head, and I've said some of the most inappropriate things you could ever imagine into a microphone because I have no filter on my brain. Everyone knows that. And I offend people, and I have no problem with offending people. And I've called people out for being idiots. And I've called everyone in the Mac community out for being an idiot. Every other podcaster, every other media personality, at some point in time, I've called them out. And I'm not calling them names or anything else like that, but if you do something stupid, I have every obligation, I believe, to point out that you said something stupid. And people don't like that. People don't like being criticized. They don't like being critiqued. But I'm not going to change because that's who I am. That's one of the reasons why the audience comes to me, because they know that they're going to get an honest, hopefully informed opinion from me. If you want just a fan-friendly podcast, those are out there for whatever thing you are a fan of. But if you want honest podcasting, if you want people who are not going to blow smoke up your rear end, then there's places for those podcasters too. That's the thing from the audience point of view too. If you're an audience member, you can find the podcast that you want to listen to. There's not just one anymore. I mean, I think there's probably about 20 or 30 different Macintosh-focused podcasts now. At least, yeah. So you can find an audience. You can find an audience for your product, and the reverse is true. If you're an audience member, you can find a podcast that suits your needs.
Now, I do have to call Sean out. He does have a filter. He just used it.
I did.
But that's because he asked before we actually started recording, because he's a true professional, is what's the rating of the show? And I said PG. And he was good with that. So, and I do want to...
I am proud of the fact, Tim, I am the only person, the only person to ever get Adam Angst of Tidbits, tidbits.com, the only person to ever get Adam Angst to curse on a podcast. Adam's the nicest guy in the world. Butter doesn't melt in his mouth. But I got him so wound up over a particular subject that he actually cursed on the air. And I literally raised my hand like I scored a touchdown. Like, yes!
Yeah.
I got Adam Angst to curse. I'm the coolest.
No. That's quite an accomplishment.
It really is.
It is. Because he is like, he was the most mellow, straight line, just a nice guy. Him and his wife, to be honest.
I love Adam and Tanya.
Yeah, the great people. So looking back over 20 years, do you have any particular interviews that you did with people or any special guests that you had on the show that were really, really memorable? And if you had to put your greatest hits together in, you know, a couple compilations, what were some of those people? Who were some of those people?
I got to say that as crazy as he seems to be in the last 5 to 10 years, the Woz interview I did, I think I did two Steve Wozniak interviews. Love doing those. He is a very, very sweet man in both an interview and in person. Wonderful guy. Interesting guy when you can get him focused on what you want him to talk about. So he would definitely be in my greatest hits package. Robin Williams, the comedian. I interviewed him on the show floor of a Macworld Expo many years ago. He was just wandering. One of the great things about a Macworld Expo is you could be wandering around and there'd be these celebrities that would just be on the show floor. Robin Williams and Sinbad and Steve Tyler from Aerosmith and Herbie Hancock, the musician. I interviewed all those guys on the show floors of Macworld Expos. Those were great interviews. And I probably put all those. Actually, you know what? I wouldn't put them all in the greatest hits. Herbie Hancock was a bit dry, but certainly Robin Williams would go in my greatest hits one. I don't know how much of a fan folks are nowadays of the TV show Seinfeld.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's classic.
All the Seinfeld characters are based on real people. And the Kramer character is based on a guy named Kenny Kramer. And Kenny Kramer is hilarious. He is a very, very funny guy. Michael Richards, the guy who played Kramer on the show, maybe overacted the Kramer character, but if you tone it down a little bit, that's Kenny Kramer. The interview I did with Kenny was just hilarious, completely R-rated. Just you couldn't listen to that interview now on a PG or G-rated show.
Was that at the Macworld Expo? Or?
No, we did that one on the phone. Met up with him later at Macworld Expo. That was the expo that they announced the iMac, the first the Bondi Blue iMac. But he was a great guy. It was a lot of fun. There's some interviews that I've done over the years that are great because we don't talk about the Macintosh. One of them was that I remember vividly is did an interview with Jean-Philippe Cousteau, Jacques Cousteau's grandson,
who
was also an oceanographer. And he had a theory that sharks act differently because we basically put food in the water. When you go into a shark tank, when they put that cage over the side of a boat and a scuba diver jumps in, that's putting raw meat in front of sharks. So they're going to act differently. So he invented a shark-shaped submarine, a one-man submarine that would swim like a shark. He would get into it, and there was cameras all over the outside of it, and he would swim with sharks to see if they acted differently when human beings weren't in the water. And the hook to the interview was that he shot that using Final Cut Pro, edited it using Final Cut Pro on Macintoshes. But when I remember the interview, I realized we never talked about Final Cut Pro. We never talked about the Macintoshes he was using because it was secondary to the actual interview, the fascination of his oceanographic career and who his grandfather was. So those kind of interviews I really like too. I think the most fun interview from a behind the scenes point of view was how much trouble I got into after the interview.
Yeah.
We were the very first show to broadcast from Macworld Expos live from the show floor. And those were always done at noon. So Steve Jobs would do the keynote at 9 o'clock, it would end around 11. We'd run to the show floor, get set up, and at noon we'd start doing this live show. And Apple would always say, "Yes, we'll get you a guest, but we can't tell you who that guest is." And while that kind of ticked me off, I realized, well, if they told me who the guest was, I would know what Steve Jobs was announcing at the keynote. And Apple doesn't let anybody do that.
Correct.
So what would happen is literally, I would say, "Okay, folks, here we are, Your Mac Life from Macworld Expo. Thank you all." And there'd be a big stage, there'd be 200 people watching, blah, blah. And I'd say, and now coming up on stage, I'd wave the guy on the stage, and he would literally be walking towards me with a business card. So I've got to read the guy's business card and come up on the spot with an interview segment of this guy. So, like, no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure at all.
In a live video, audio to the internet segment.
And with an audience right in front of you.
Right, an audience right in front of me, exactly. And so this guy walks up to me, and I said, from Apple we have, and I read his name. I don't remember what the guy's name was. But it turned out he was a product manager for, remember iTools?
Sure, of course.
What did we call it after iTools?
Oh, man. Dot Me?
Dot
Me was after that. You know what? Was it Dot Mac?
Whatever it was, yeah. Apple was going to charge you $99 for it. Remember that?
Oh, too well.
And there was this big stink of iTools free. This next thing was going to cost $100. I remember sitting in the keynote thinking, well, this isn't going to go over very well. So this guy was a product manager for that thing, right? And so I said to the audience, you know, this is so-and-so. And you could feel the audience go, you know, they weren't happy about it. And I said, I looked over to the audience. One part of my brain is trying to think up questions to ask this guy. The front part of my brain is asking this question to the audience. How many of you here use iTools? Everyone put their hand up because everyone used iTools.
Sure.
It was free. I said, how many of you are upset to have to pay $99 for this next version? Everyone put their hand up. And in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, now I'm going to get this guy to justify why Apple says there's going to be $99 worth of value in this interview. Sorry, in this new product. And it was a good interview. The guy did a good job of explaining Apple's philosophy of why we're getting rid of iTools and all the new cool stuff that we're going to bring on in this new software that was going to cost you $99. Now, not everybody was convinced, but I think he did a good job of explaining that. So thanks for – we do 15 minutes. Thanks very much. Off he goes. So we do the show for an hour. Now I'm going to go over to the Mac booth, the Apple booth, to see the new products, to get pictures, that kind of stuff. I walk over, and my PR contact is there, and she's giving me the finger, like the walk over here finger. And I go over there, and she goes, what the hell did you do? What? What did you do in that interview? I said, what are you talking about? You had the audience booing him. What? No, I did not. They were booing him on their own.
I wasn't a ringleader here. I just asked an honest question.
Exactly. And Apple was pissed at me over that. They were really, really upset at me over that. And that's the point where I decided, you know what? I'm not going to interview Apple ever again. They're just too much of a pain in the butt to interview with their hyper secrecy, with their anal retentiveness when it comes to people have to stay on message. You know, you have to ask the right questions. You're not allowed to ask certain questions of Apple people. I thought, you know what? It's just not worth the hassle anymore. So I'd put that interview in my greatest hits one, if only for the backstory.
Yeah, well, and again, and you said this earlier, Apple is a multinational company. They're one of the most highly valued companies in the world, if not the most highly valued one in the world right now. Yep. I'm not sure, because I don't really care about the stock market.
Yep.
And I agree with you, Sean. You don't want to love the company. You want to love the products around it. You want to love the community around it. If you want to love a company, it can't be a company that size. It just can't.
Well, one thing that's interesting, you started mymac.com in 95. I started a version of Your Mac Life in 94.
What was the name before?
I think it started off as The Mac Show.
Yeah.
Mac Chat. I think Mac Chat was probably the right one. It changed in various iterations as I moved around the country, moved around the world.
It's ostensibly been the same show, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's always been me and usually a co-host, and it's the same flavor of the show. It's always been we've always had an IRC chat room that's open live during the show. We've always had an archive. We've always had contests and email and all that kind of fun stuff that, you know, every talk radio show. That was the basis of it, was talk radio. The traditional talk radio kind of idea, but with all the extra elements that I could bring to it from the internet. The fact that, you know, we have a live IRC chat room. We were the first ones to do that. We were the first to do a video podcast with live video, the first to use video chat, first to use QuickTime Broadcaster. And I say all these things as first because no one else was doing them.
No.
I mean, Apple actually called up when QuickTime 4 was the first version of QuickTime that supported streaming over the internet, live streaming. And before that, that was in 1999. Before that, we were using Real Audio, which was just a dog's breakfast of software. It was awful, but it was the only thing you could use.
Well, plus, with Real Audio, I mean, the compression was pretty good for its day, and you got to remember, almost everybody that was listening in live They were on a modem. They were not on a broadband. It was, at the most, they were on 56K modems.
So Apple actually called me up in 1999 and said, hey, we know you do this show. The QuickTime head of marketing at the time, not Frank Casanova, but the guy before him, came up, called me up and said, hey, we want you to do your show in QuickTime Broadcaster, because you're, you know, the only or the biggest at the time podcast out there, broadcast out there. We want you to stream using our software instead of that real audio stuff. So, you know, it's been a while since we've been doing this. But the interesting thing to me is we know there are more Mac users out there than ever before. There are the company is bigger. The stores are insanely huge and packed all the time. Yet doesn't it feel like the community is smaller than it was back in the day? Isn't that interesting phenomenon? That,
you know, I had this conversation with someone just recently in exactly that, and I figured out what it was. Right. And it's because there are more users, and the company isn't in trouble. And when we were at the Macworld Expo in 2000, and before that, writing articles and you broadcasting on the internet, our community was in trouble. It looked like it could go away at any time, and it almost did. So we all rallied together, and even those who had a very soft-spoken voice was yelling from the trees loudly, hey, this is, you know, or the mountains, I should say, not the trees. This is a great product. Everyone needs to use this. Windows is terrible compared to this. Come over here, look at this. Because we wanted what we were passionate about to survive.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about it.
Excellent point. That's a great point, because I've been thinking about the same thing. As we hear, you know, Macworld Expos, the attendance is going down every year, even though the pool of users is going up every year. And I think that's exactly what it is, that because the company isn't in trouble, we don't feel the need to band together as this Robin Hood and his merry men kind of thing, fighting the good fight. There's no need anymore for us to get together. And also because of the way the internet has allowed us to band together on the internet. We no longer have to be in a physical location in order to support each other. We've got forums, and we've got Twitter, and you've got Facebook, and you've got all the other avenues for people to make their feelings known. There's no need anymore to travel to San Francisco to see these events, which is a shame, because it means that those events get smaller and smaller and possibly go away. And I'd hate, people always get on me for my criticisms of Macworld Expo, but I absolutely would hate to see Macworld Expo go away, because I still think the physical aspect of getting together with like-minded people is very, very important for those people. There's the old line that you can't see eye to eye unless you see face to face.
That's true.
I really believe that. I really believe that no matter how many tools I have here, I'm connected almost 24 hours a day to people from around the world. Anytime I want to have a conversation with somebody, if it's early morning here, I can talk to folks on the East Coast. If it's late evening here, I can talk to people in Europe. If it's midnight here, I can talk to folks in Asia and in Australia. I've got a community of people I can talk to any day of the week. And yet I still crave going outside my apartment and having a beer with friends. That to me is more important than Twitter, than Facebook, than email, than anything else. Just going out and sitting with friends at a pub and having a beer.
So you started in 1995.
94.
Or 94. What was the one thing that got you to talk about Mac instead of, you know, any other variety of subject that you could have started with? Why Mac?
I was a Macintosh consultant at the time, and everyone knows consultant is a Greek word for unemployed.
Yeah.
And so I had all these customers that I was going to. I probably had 20 or 30 regular customers. I would go into their offices or their homes, whatever it was, on a regular basis, and saying the same thing to each one of them. And it was, you know, there's a new virus definition out there. Here's a cool piece of software. Here's something I learned that was interesting. And then fixing their computers. And it got kind of annoying to say the same thing over and over and over and over again. And someone suggested, well, why don't you record this stuff and use this new internet thing, put the recording up on this internet thing, and people can listen to it at their leisure. And that's how I got started, because I was a Macintosh guy. I was talking to my customers about Macintosh, so I just did a recording of me talking about Macintosh. We had a bit of a script, although I've never really scripted the show. It's always been on the fly and off the cuff. So we would do it that way. The guy with me in when I first started the show, Adam, he was the audio engineer, so he sat down and he pushed all the buttons to make me sound as good as I could.
And it took a lot more equipment back then.
Yeah, it really did. And he was the guy who set up the website and set up the streaming and the real audio thing. I was just the talent. I was just the guy in front of the microphone talking. And it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years later that someone said, you know, you should get advertisers for this thing. At that time, we probably had a few hundred listeners to the show each week. And so I put out feelers to all the Macintosh magazines and said, you know, I'm doing this audio thing. Maybe you guys want to sponsor it. The only one who responded was, it's long defunct now, but it was a magazine called Mac Home Journal. Yep. And the editor-in-chief was a friend of mine, Ed Prasik. Ed liked the show. He sponsored the show. He took Adam and I, he gave us a budget. He took Adam and I to our first Macworld Expo, which I think was 96 or 97. I'm not exactly sure which year
it was.
New York
or San Francisco?
New York.
Actually, yeah. Was it New York then or Boston?
It was definitely New York. So okay. It was probably 97. And that was the coolest thing in the world. Someone was going to pay these two little small town Canadian kids to fly across the country, stay in a really nice hotel. They were buying our food. They were taking us to parties. Like, whoa, this is the coolest thing ever. And that's when I realized, yeah, I want to do this for a job, man.
Sure.
This is fun. And then companies started to send us product. 1 year shortly after the iMac came out and USB was a big thing, I sent an email off to the Gravis guys. I don't even know Gravis is still in business,
but wow.
Joystick manufacturer. They made the coolest joysticks for
Absolutely.
Flight simulators. And so I sent an email to them saying, you know, could you send me one of these joysticks so I can test it out and see if it works? They do, and somehow there was some sort of miscommunication. They sent me 37.
Maybe they thought you were the Canadian Air Force.
I come home and literally the UPS guy has stacked them up in front of my door of my apartment. I can't get into my apartment because there's 37 boxes of joysticks in front. Everyone I knew for Christmas got joysticks.
Seriously, yeah, absolutely.
Including my mom. My mom didn't even have a computer. And I was like, here, Mom, I wrapped it nice. And all that kind of, it was a joke. You know, I wrapped it all nice. But yeah, I had to get rid of these 37 freaking joysticks. Man, I didn't need 37 joysticks.
Wow.
But that's kind of around the time when I knew it could be a gainful employment and a thing I continue to want to do because people responded to it. I've been telling the folks on the show for the last couple of weeks now, one of the things that we don't get is enough positive feedback. When people don't like something we do, they're very happy to send us an email. They're very quick to send an email to Sean@yourmaclifeshow.com. Let's stop doing that so much and let's start giving positive reinforcement to people. If you like something, it's just as easy to send an email to the guy saying that you like that. It could be a quick email. Hey, I liked your last show. Boom, done. Or I like what you've been doing. That's what kept me going in those middle years, was the fact that these people were responding to what we were doing, that mostly because it wasn't techie. One of the things I'm most proud about on our show is that through surveys, we found out about 25% of our audience is female. And I was curious to know why, and I found out one of the reasons is because we're not techie. Women just generally aren't as wanting to get into the nuts and bolts of DDR3 RAM and 5400 RPM hard drive and that kind of stuff. What they want is a show that is less about the technology, more about the fun stuff they can do with the technology. For some reason, we've got this really large female audience, and it's certainly not because of my face. It ain't because I'm the prettiest guy in tech. I mean, really, as I've always said, I've got a great face for radio. There's no way it's because of me. But I love the fact that we get this wide range of audience members, and we have so many female audience members. And they are the ones that are most often the ones that will send me an email saying, hey, I really like that last show, or thanks very much for the information. But I'm trying to encourage everyone to do that, whether it's on Twitter, on the person's Facebook page, by email, whatever it is. If you like what someone does, tell them. You have no idea, the audience, the people who are listening to this right now, have no idea how good that will make Tim feel. If you send him an email that says, hey, Tim, I've been listening to you for X number of years, or I've just started listening to you yesterday, I really like what you do. We read those emails, and it gives us a boost, folks. It really does. It makes us want to keep doing this thing for you, for that one guy in Miami, Florida, who just sent me an email that says, hey, I really like that last show. Please keep doing it. Okay, I will. You know.
And, of course, that's owcradio@macsales.com.
I was hoping you would jump in with that. I left that hanging for you.
So, you know, one of the funny things is maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago, the entire Mac web, if you will, the Apple web was talking about this is the 30th anniversary of the Macintosh.
Yep.
And Apple actually doesn't refer to it the Macintosh at all anymore. It's just Mac.
Yeah.
And then it died away just as quickly as it started. No one talked about it. And I thought, no, I want to continue to talk about it, not constantly, but at least throughout this year of 2014, because it's a huge thing, at least for me personally, and I think for most of the people that listen to this show and the other shows that I do, it's a big thing. So one of the things I want to talk about here before we let you go, Sean, is what was the first Macintosh you bought and why did you buy it?
First Macintosh I bought was a SE30.
Oh my gosh. 9-inch
black and white screen, and I bought it because I loved it. It was so cute. It was the sweetest little thing, and it opened up my world. I'm not a computer geek. I never have been. When I was
Well,
in college,
why did you buy it then in the first, I mean?
Well, when I was in college, all my friends, all my buddies were all computer science guys. I was a political science guy. And one day, in political science, you're writing papers constantly. You're constantly just bashing away at a typewriter. And I'm one of those guys who, I never had a computer when I was a kid. We were poor when I was a kid, so I never had a Commodore 64 or an Apple IIe or whatever it might have been. I didn't even use a computer until I got to college. And I would use my friend's Windows computers, and I hated them. Absolutely hated the Windows computer. All this typing away and bashing away and having to learn all these arcane commands, hated it. So I would do all my term papers, all my weekly papers on a typewriter. And so one night I've got a political economics paper due, and I'm bashing away, and I break the E key on my typewriter. The E key. Okay? You can get away with a broken Q key. You can get away with a broken Z key. But you can't get away with a broken E key. No. You're screwed. So I run up to the college I was at and go into the typewriter lab, and everyone else is using the typewriters. Like, oh my God, I need to get a typewriter. And the kid behind the counter said, well, you can go to the computer lab. It's like, oh man, I don't want to use a computer. Jeez. Okay, fine. I go over there. Is there any computers free? And the guy said, yeah, this was a Mac lab, so very few people were actually using it.
Right.
And it was a row upon row, probably 30 or 40 of SE30s. And I said, what is that? He said, it's a computer. It's not like the computers that I've been using. He said, no, it's a Macintosh. So he sits me down in front of this little screen, and he said, do you know how to use a computer? I said, well, yeah. Oh, this is a little bit different. Use this mousey thing and move that cursory thing around the screen and click on the pretty pictures. Like, what the hell is this? This is a Fisher-Price computer? Right. What the hell is this? So I used the little mousey thing and went, okay. So I use the mousey thing, the little arrowy thing moves around. The guy said, just click on this icon. And this thing opened up, the window opened up, and there it was, a little cursor blinking. Okay, I recognize the cursor blinking, I can type. So I start typing away, and I start bashing away on the computer. And that was my first use of a Macintosh computer. And it was so easy. I found out later, I was using Quark Express.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea. All I saw was a white screen with black text on it. And it was fun to be able to move the text. The guy showed me how to do cut and paste. And it was like, oh, wow. So I can just, if that sentence is in the wrong place, rather than having to rewrite the page like I did on my typewriter, I can just slide this text around. This is the coolest thing ever. And literally, I went from a B student to an A student. And it was because of the fact I could write more. When you were using a typewriter, I could maybe pound out three drafts or something before I got tired of writing because my fingers hurt, because I was bashing away in the typewriter. But I could do 12, 15 drafts of a document on a computer because I could move these things around and do more research, things like that. So, yeah, I fell in love with that computer. And as soon as I could scrape up enough money through odd jobs in college, I bought one for myself because with a little handle on it, was cute. I'd take it on the bus with me.
16
I'd go to friends' houses.
So.
Oh yeah, it was heavy as hell. But I was young. I could do it.
Sure.
So I would take it to friends' house. So they'd be on their computers, trying to install printer drivers, whatever the hell they were trying to do, and I'd be just playing games. There was a great flight sim F-16. I could play that, and this was my first laptop.
it really was. Absolutely.
At least my first portable. I would carry this thing all over the place and just absolutely loved a little computer. And one day, I don't know what happened. I lost it or lost it a move. But I remember going to, in Nashville, Tennessee, this was in 2002, going to a little swap meet and seeing this little lonely SE30 sitting there. And I had no use for it, but I still bought it. It was $5.
Yeah, you had to.
I had to buy that thing. I had it on my desk for years just to look at and to touch every now and then because that was my first love in computers. That was my first one.
Yeah, I still have the Performa 410 that I started my Mac on. It's in a shed. I doubt if it even boots up anymore.
Yep.
But, I mean, there's history there. And I think it's important, as long as you don't become a hoarder, it's important to hold on to stuff like that.
There's not just history there. For a lot of us Mac fans, there is emotion there. Sure. I think that's the even more important, is that, you know, you can have a history of all the Macs that have ever been, and that's great. But there is, for, and maybe this is what separates Mac users from PC or Windows users, we make, an, for better or worse, and sometimes it can be worse, we make an emotional connection with our computers, even the ones we have now, certainly the first ones we ever used, if it was a good computer. The first Macintoshes we used, for whatever reason, my first Mac opened up my world for me. It opened up the ability for me to do a whole bunch of different things I wouldn't have been able to do without using that Macintosh. It's the reason why I do what I do now. So that SE30 really just made my life different. Not better, but certainly different than the life I had planned out for myself.
What was that life that you had planned out for yourself with, you know, political science? Which, by the way, the BS that you get in college for the political science means totally different thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The initials are a little different.
But they still mean the same thing. It's definitely a BS degree. That's for sure. I was on a political science track studying East European and Russian studies, and the plan was to go to the Carleton University. This is in Ottawa, Canada. Carleton University Law School. To become a lawyer. That was the plan. And then I ran out of money, and that dream faded, but eventually ended up where I am now.
So, Sean, before we go here, can you tell us and the listeners, if they want to find you on the internet, they want to hear your show, they want to find you on Twitter, where are you located online?
On Twitter, it is Sean King, so twitter.com/Sean King. Do not follow me on Twitter. I'm telling you right now, I warn you, I am a Twitter, I have Twitter diarrhea. I tweet way too much, dude.
Way too much.
Everyone knows it. Way too much. Yeah, I have no problem. People don't want to follow me because, I always tell folks, Twitter is what you make of it. And what I make of Twitter is a conversation medium. So I've got 200 people I talk to all day long. So if you don't talk to those same people, all your Twitter feed fills up with is just Sean's BS. So, yeah, don't follow me on Twitter. The website for the show is yourmaclifeshow.com. YML is the acronym for it, yourmaclifeshow.com. You can also find me on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. I just started getting more into Facebook in the last couple of weeks. I've had a Facebook account for years, but haven't bothered to use it.
Yeah, we were friends on Facebook for years and years, and then all of a sudden I'm starting to see Sean King pop back up.
I just haven't gotten into using it. And it's only because I've started another thing about photography. One of the regular segments we have on the show now is about photography. One of the things I love teaching is teaching people how to take better pictures with the camera they already have.
You've always been into photography as long as I knew. I remember you had that big, huge camera around your neck. I've got pictures of you at the Macworld Expo 14 years ago, and you've got a big camera, so
yeah.
You're really into... I know you just did an event for... Was it Canon or...
Olympus.
Olympus, yeah.
Up in Whistler, British Columbia, Canada. My thing is that I can teach you 10 tips, tricks, and techniques in plain English that will make your next photograph better than your last photograph, no matter what camera you have. I'm not saying you have to go out and buy a $5,000 DSLR or a mirrorless camera, but if all you got is an iPhone, I can teach you how to take better pictures with your iPhone. It's really easy. It's surprisingly easy. And so that's why I got into using Facebook, was to promote this thing. It's called startingpointphotography.com. And the cool thing is it's live on-demand video. It's a Google Hangout video where you can see me, I can see you, and we'll do it at a time that's convenient for you. So I don't set it up so that you have to be there Thursday at 3 o'clock. I've got a lady in Perth, Australia, who is setting up a time for us to do the class. It's a two-hour class. She's going to be there at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. Perth time. That's 3 a.m. my time.
Wow.
And that's fine. I'll get up. I'll set an alarm, and I'll get up and do the class for her at 3 a.m. Because I really love helping people. We all take pictures. 90% of the people who are listening to this right now have a camera.
Sure.
And 75% of them take a picture, look at it, and go, geez, that picture's crap. Why? You know, we take so many bad pictures.
Yep.
And it's not because of the gear or anything else, I guess, because we don't know how to take good pictures. We haven't been taught how to take good pictures, the quote-unquote rules.
Well, we made the technology a lot easier to use, but we didn't give them any of the fundamentals that they probably should have to take good pictures.
Exactly. So every week on the Your Mac Life show, we do a little photography segment. Last week, yesterday, we did a show about your rights as a photographer, what you are allowed to shoot and what you are not allowed to shoot when you are taking pictures and what rights you have as a photographer. So it's a wide-ranging thing. And then we do the classes. So the Facebook page, we have a Your Mac Life Show Facebook page. You can just do a search for on Facebook to find that one. To find me on Facebook, again, just do a search for Sean King. But it's Sean M. King, because Sean King is Larry King's wife.
Oh, is it really?
I get a lot of her email. I get a lot of her tweets. Hey, Sean, we love your last concert. Yeah, wrong person. Sorry, that's not me at all. I'm not married to Larry King. It's the problem of having a fairly common name that I get mistaken for many, many different people.
Well, at least her last name wasn't Snowden, because then it would be a problem.
That could be ugly.
Sean King is a luminary when it comes to internet broadcasting, or just broadcasting in general. We kind of, personally, I think we need to stop talking about them as different things. It's broadcasting. I don't care if you're doing it on the internet or over the open airwaves or a cable that comes in and connects to your television. Yep. Broadcasting is broadcasting. And Sean King, you've been doing it for 20 years. I hope you feel proud about that. I'm happy to know you. I've enjoyed your content for many, many years. And I want to thank you a lot for coming on this episode of OWC Radio.
You are very welcome, Jim. Thanks for inviting me, buddy.